Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm joined this afternoon by Ashwini, who is here to talk about the Sangha practice name for 2014. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Jen. Thank you.
So the last couple of years, we've had themes that we've carried through the year of practice, this last one being the cooperative of practice being lit up together, and the year before that, deepening practice. And it's been so powerful for people that we've decided to continue the tradition, and we have a new theme for 2014.
Yes, we do.
So what can we look forward to?
Drum roll, Jen.
Okay, I'm doing it. I don't know if you can hear.
Okay. Well, the theme for the year is upping your game.
Upping your game. Uh-huh.
Yes. And I bet the question is, why is it upping your game?
Why is it upping game? What's up with that?
Well, when we rolled out this 2 years ago, the first practice theme was deepening your practice.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, a phenomenal transformation in the practice of the Sangha to really have that focus.
Yep.
Right? And there were lots of changes that happened to people's practice in their relationship with karmic conditioning and moving beyond self-hate. And what I think we got to at the end of that year was what propelled the momentum for the next practice theme, which was the cooperative of Sangha being lit up together. So you go beyond self-hate, you're no longer in relationship to the voices of conditioning. If we're transcending that and we're doing it together, what we're doing is being lit up.
Yeah.
Right? So as a cooperative of practice, the deepening practice brought us all together as a Sangha. And what does it mean to practice as a Sangha that is going beyond self-hate? That's what the being lit up exploration was about.
Yeah.
So in the first year, we explored separation. In the second year, we explored belonging.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
So if the attention is not on the process of suffering, then the attention is on the process of living.
Yes.
And the process of being living is being lit up.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's
and
perfect.
So, and so then when we get to a very, very solid sense of our practice and a sense of our well-being, two things happen. One is conditioning ups its game, because
yes.
it's exactly at that point that it talks us out of practicing.
Yep.
Because everything is going well, why would you need to practice?
Right.
If I'm not suffering and I'm not trying to escape from suffering, then what is my practice?
Yeah, we're all set now.
Yes, we're all set now. So conditioning is upping its game, and we're upping ours. So that's one of the reasons for the theme. But the second reason for the theme is also that when we are dropping into awareness
uh-huh.
and the alternative to suffering, that's when spiritual practice really begins. Right, when the beating stops. And so we're looking at all of the things that we can focus our attention on in order for us to have and live a sense of well-being.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So there's training around training the body. So there's going to be a huge focus on fitness, the fitness of the practice and the fitness of the body as the instrument of awakening. There's a component of training in any game that we play, because there's a set of practice drills that allows us to hone the skill of being in this new way of living.
Mm-hmm.
And the drills that we are going to be focusing on are all around recording and listening, which has been so transformative to get the practice to this place.
Right.
And the motif is the game. Because conditioning is serious and grim,
yeah, exactly.
and awareness is being lit up
yeah.
in joy and in fun.
Yeah.
So we want to practice playing in life,
yeah.
enjoying life, being
yeah.
alive.
Yeah.
And so the practice focuses, how can we do that?
Yes, and it's such a great metaphor, such a good focus, because it is so joyful to play hard in a game. And to really
yes.
train, you know, there really is something. So it's you know, sometimes we can associate play with, like, you know, just hanging around and doing whatever, but that upping your game is like really putting focus into your game and how much fun it is to hone your skills and get better at it and, you know, really make the shot and all those great things. So it's a perfect metaphor.
Yes, because practice can become, you know, a grim battle, or practice can be fun.
Yeah.
And part of being in, you know, it pulls together all of the elements. There's the practice element from the first year's focus of deepening practice.
Yeah.
There's the team element of the Sangha and the joy and the fun of moving beyond the voices of self-hate, not feeling bad from last year.
Yep.
There's the belonging element that all of us are doing this together from the last year. And then this is the third plank of it, which is it all comes together in playing the game of life.
We're all
spiritual athletes.
Yes.
And so let's get the skills that we need to be spiritual athletes.
Yes, and again, it's perfect because there's a very crucial individual element to it. Like, each of us is training this body that I'm inside of and training the attention here that I'm stewarding. And each of us is being the best athlete we can be for this individual and for the whole team.
Well, that's the Sangha part of it, right, Jen? Because, again, the concept of other is a separateness that only exists in conditioning. So it's my practice. But my practice is really my contribution to the whole of practice. So each of us are different cells.
Yeah.
And part of the Buddha and part of this focus is to break those conditioned narratives of separation of this is my practice or this is the practice and I'm stewarding the practice, and really, really get that the game doesn't get played without all of us.
Yeah.
And what we contribute is our practice, our participation, our commitment, our willingness to show up, our willingness to train, and our willingness to have fun.
Yeah, I love that, our willingness to have fun. I can be willing for that.
Mm-hmm. And really, when we were going through the strategic planning focus process, the here that I wanted to bring up in the show is, you know, when we are in the place of disidentifying from the voices, which is a really important place, our practice is to go to that place of compassion from which we can reassure the small person who's subject to the voices of self-hate.
Uh-huh.
So it's a process of growing the awareness, or the grown-up awareness, that was not allowed to grow because the child was stuck.
Yes.
And so once we embrace those young parts of ourselves into compassion, we're free to be the grown-up awareness. And the grown-up awareness has the ability to participate in life from a very different orientation than a child or a consumer orientation to a practice. It's truly a place of spiritual transformation.
Yes. Oh, it's so exciting as you say it. And, you know, I do want to give you a chance, if you think this is a good forum for it. We have only another minute or so, but to look at what some of the components of that might be, or maybe we come back another time and look more at that. But I know there are going to be a number of supports through the year to take us through this theme.
Definitely. Let me get to that in 1 second, Jen. Just finish that thought. So
okay.
The shift, and we'll see this in the schedule and the event, is not so much that I'm receiving from practice, but what is my contribution? My practice is my contribution, and how else can I contribute? And to take that ownership and be the grown-up that is showing up, not the child.
Yep.
And we explore that in our usual year-long retreat focus. So we're kicking off the video workshop on the 19th, I believe, and registration opens tomorrow for that. And we'll explore the whole arc of the year.
Uh-huh.
We have 5 workshops, at-home workshops, that will be led by Sherry and the facilitators, exploring the planks, the 5 planks that underlie playing the game, like what are the drills, the focus on fitness,
mm-hmm.
how do we do it in the spirit of play, how do we contribute to the team, how do we celebrate, all of the aspects that we were talking about, we'll explore in workshops. And that's the year-long retreat. People can sign up for everything, the video workshop, 2 email classes, and 5 at-home retreats right out of the gate.
Uh-huh.
Or we realized that lots of people who couldn't sign up had no ability to join us in mid-course.
Right.
So you have an a la carte option and a year-long option. You can just choose whichever ones you want to participate in. Or you can sign up for the entire retreat, and that registration will open after the video workshop, I believe. And then we don't have a radio show that's dedicated to the year-long focus, but we have a radio show that's attached to every email class. And I believe that the facilitator program is also stepping up in offering the practice through a couple of new programs we're playing with, like a virtual sitting group, which people will hear more about, and a text-to-talk program or tweet-talk-back program, which is one-on-one coaching, but with texting instead of phone calls or actual meetings. And so there's just a plethora of different opportunities that are being introduced this year that are all related to this transformation and shift from being that aware, the awareness that shows up for practice.
And, you know, gosh, it's just really exciting as you lay it out, because that point you made a minute ago is so huge, that place of inviting the grown-up, that really is it. I mean, we're all contributing members of practice. It is truly our practice, and it does feed perfectly off the theme of belonging of this last year.
Right, and there's also, we're going to add an additional corner to the monthly newsletter that explores what that attitude of mind might be, right? How do you care for everything? How do you practice with everything? It's called Everything is the Buddha Corner.
Uh-huh.
And then we have another monthly sort of musings newsletter, which allows us to explore the practice aspects of many things, like, you know, how do donations relate to practice, and what responsibility do we have from a stewardship perspective, and explore our issues around money and contribution and all of those things that are just built into the content of our practice, but people who don't understand the process reasons for it. And so there's a wider and wider dissemination of trying to get to the place where something from practice is offered.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of just consuming it and assuming that we know what it's about, to really get to the place from which it's being offered so that we understand how we get to that place more, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If the Buddha was doing this, he would do it this way for some reason.
Yeah.
And we can just accept that, or we can use that as an invitation to go to the place from which the Buddha was offering it.
Wow.
And that's the shift that we're trying to do with this whole year.
Wow. It's really, really exciting. Really exciting. And just such a, as you say, a plethora of things lined up to support folks, to support all of us in making that really important shift.
And you know, Jen, I think the most important and the most exciting thing for everyone listening to this is it speaks to the adequacy of life in everyone, right? That's what it calls people forward to. So it's not that just the awareness that's showing up that's grown up, but what is being offered meets that place of practice, which is where the Sangha is at.
Yeah, yeah, which is where the Sangha is at. Yep, yep, we're very blessed. Yeah.
Very, very blessed.
Very, very blessed. So, Ashwini, anything else you want to say about it? Obviously, we've got an entire year to explore it, but anything else you want to say as we sign off this evening?
Buckle up.
Buckle up. Will do.
It's going to be a great ride.
It really is. Yep. We together. Yep. Thank you so much, Ashwini.
Thanks a lot, Jen.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, good. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Ashwini. Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Hello, Michael.
Hello. I'm getting my gear on, suiting up, ready for the game.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, if we could get those gals to be a little more lit up and enthusiastic, maybe, you know, the rest of us could be more enthusiastic.
Right.
Don't you love? I mean, I'm listening, and I'm getting you know, we could say more lit up, or we could say higher.
Yes, yes.
The
yes.
enthusiasm, the excitement is building.
Yes.
I guess that's how kind of professional athletes feel. You know, by the time you finally take the field or get on the floor, the court or whatever it is, you're just so pumped up with excitement
yeah.
and enthusiasm that, you know, just go out there and do it. So, yeah, I think it's just going to be our best year yet.
It sounds like it. It's
mm-hmm.
very fun. And
mm-hmm.
even more new practice opportunities.
Yes.
Who
yeah.
would have guessed?
Yeah. Yeah, some really exciting things. I was thinking about it as Ashwini and Jen were talking, you know, that we sort of put a focus on people supporting the practice to the best of their ability. But it's not something that we push a lot or that we put a lot of stress on. And the kinds of things that we're introducing this coming year are going to be more things that are not revenue producers because we really do want everybody to have access to as much of practice as they can possibly avail themselves of, because we want everyone who wants to awaken and end suffering. And so, you know, we'll talk about how we support it and that sort of thing. But I was thinking as those two were talking that we'll just keep doing this until we run out of money. And if that happens, then, you know, we'll just say, but wasn't it a good time? Wasn't it really a good time? Because, you know, that is what it's about.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, this show being one of those things, you know, for what are we on, year 11 or 12 or some darn thing, you know, and neither one of us have ever received anything from it except the joy of doing it. And, you know, it's just made freely available to anyone who wants to tune in and listen to it. And that's how we want it to be. That's really how we want it to be. And then when people say, you know, this has changed my life, I love this. I want this to go on forever. I got to support this. I got to get more involved. How can I participate? What can I do? And that's how it will go on forever.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And so helpful to recognize that these things are offered for free by donation, and yet there is a physical cost for you and the
All
monastery to run, and the phones and the internet and the food and the building.
Yeah.
And the tears coming to my eyes, to repay that, you know, I can never repay that debt, and to recognize the effort that has been made, the resources that are used, and wanting that to be available for the next person, my children,
yes.
those who come later.
Yes, exactly so. And that of course, is our hope and dream, and I guess as close as we come to it, our belief.
Yes.
That as people's lives are transformed, it will become, you know, we're all about not taking things personally, and that it will become personal in the sense of, this is my practice. This is important to me. I want this. I think it was Ashwini was talking to me the other day about something like NPR. It exists because there's a group of people who find that kind of programming really helpful and meaningful.
Yes.
And it means so much to them that they want to pay for it.
Yes.
And that's, you know, PBS, all of those kinds of things where people value what's being produced and offered such that they want to take responsibility for picking up the tab for it. And, so that's what we're counting on, because in this consumer culture, we really do want to. It's not that there's anything wrong with money. God knows I don't believe that, but not to have it be consumer driven in the sense that the only people we want to have support it are the people who really value it and benefit from it, and. I think it's going to continue to work.
Yes, I think it will.
Mm-hmm. Do you have announcements?
I do, one of which was already mentioned. Mark your calendar for the upcoming video workshop with you, Sherry, on Sunday, January 19th.
Yeah.
The free event.
Tradition now.
Yes. Going to kick off our theme for next year, which is upping your game.
Yeah.
And there's time to start planning now for next year's Visiting Monk program, an advanced and challenging opportunity. It's a great chance to deepen your practice by spending a month or more training at the monastery.
Mm. Yeah. And so it really is good for people to be looking at who want to do it, which month is going to be their month, because I think we've decided that we will only have two people in training in that program at a time on the property. So that's not very many slots. So if somebody's thinking about it, pick your month and let us know as soon as possible.
Great.
Yeah.
A reminder that our call-in number today is 888-4-SANGHA. That's 888-472-6442. The show ID is 15406. And then you can enter your PIN followed by pound. And a reminder to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes.
Hi, thanks, Michael.
Here we go. You're welcome.
Here we go.
First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, it's Elizabeth.
Hello, Elizabeth.
Hey there.
How you doing?
Okay.
Good. What's
so, I had a question.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the workshop, There's Nothing Wrong With You, this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really hungry for that kind of deep emotional healing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was looking forward to doing that kind of thing again this year, just that kind of workshop with that kind of emotional healing. And then I saw when you sent out the preliminary schedule, it was the Eightfold Path was appearing a lot as one of your workshops.
Yes.
And I wanted to know if that's going to be the same kind of like processing and emotional healing as the There Is Nothing Wrong With You and those type of workshops.
Well, all of the retreats tend to go in that direction. Each year we introduce something new. So, it's what you practice, it's whatever. I can't remember what they've been, but each year we develop a new retreat that's designed to take Sangha kind of to the next level. And we attempt to make them relevant for people who are new to practice and also a deepening practice sort of opportunity for old timers. And that's what the Eightfold Path will be this year. It'll be the how you do anything or the what you practice retreat. There's Nothing Wrong With You stays on the schedule, of course, because it's just always been on the schedule and it always will be on the schedule because of the exactly what you say. It's that kind of work. And the other things that are on the schedule are an attempt to then go everywhere in between. So, the New Year's retreat that's coming up is extremely deep in the sense that wherever people are in their practice, it has the ability to meet them there and take them to the next level. So that said, our work is not necessarily aimed at emotional healing per se. Emotional healing happens all through our lives as we encounter the places where karma has had us stuck and we get free of those places and awarenesses arise and and like that. But there's nothing wrong with you is the one that is most focused on getting in touch with the young aspects of the self, and that's that movement to facing what happened to us in childhood, getting to a place of understanding and a level of peace about that that enables us then to go on and bring every aspect of our lives into practice.
So if I hear you right, since the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat has a more intense focus on the early stuff and healing that, then it, I guess for what I'm needing, it might be worth it to save up my workshop money to go to those workshops, as is kind of what I'm taking away from this for where I am right now.
Absolutely. If that is in fact where you are right now, which could be kind of interesting to explore. So yes, I mean, there are people who do There's Nothing Wrong With You with great regularity because it has the ability. So, you know, you come into practice with a certain set of issues, and then you get clarity about them. So, you know, maybe you've got an aspect of the personality who's, you know, 6 years old and got traumatized by kindergarten and that sort of thing. And now you have a relationship with that aspect of the personality. And now you're working on all the aspects of the personality. And what you're really doing, of course, is growing the relationship with the mentor. You're learning how to come back to center and to be conscious, compassionate awareness for a person, rather than going from aspect of the personality to aspect of the personality. You know what I mean by that, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And of course, until we start doing work, that is where we are, right? I mean, we're just kind of jerked around from pillar to post by all different kinds of aspects of the personality and what karmic conditioning and self-hate is doing to them. Yeah. So at a certain point, once you realize that it's possible for you, and all these pronouns get really iffy at this point, but when you realize it's possible for you to be the healing force in a person's life, in this case, the one that we call Elizabeth, then the work becomes to be that, to take care of, rather than seeking to be taken care of. Yeah?
Right.
Yeah. So, again, as we go along with awareness practice, different layers of karmic conditioning are constantly coming up. So, you know, you may feel like, well, I've put all that, you know, all my little people are lined up and we have a great relationship and I'm taking care of them, and I've cruised on to this other focus. Now I'm looking at money issues in my life, or I'm looking at a romantic relationship or something like that. And all of a sudden something comes up from your childhood that just blindsides you. And it's not a problem because you now have all the tools you need to take care of that part of yourself. And in that way, we just keep going along down the path, just seeing what arises, embracing it, and accepting it, allowing it to be. We could say letting it go, because we're allowing it to be there and just opening more and more and more to the present moment and an ability to be here, embracing and being embraced by life in each moment.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Lifetime, at least a lifetime process. Probably multiple.
I guess it's what I'm thinking is it's just going to make the most sense for where I am to wait until the summer and go to the There's Nothing Wrong With You workshop, even though I wish I could do something sooner. But I really, that focus seems to be just right for me right now, the There's Nothing Wrong With You type of stuff.
Yeah, and if you, you know, if you still want support for your practice, right, even though that's the work that you want to focus on right now. So, you know, you can still participate in all of the things that give you practice reminders and keep your tools and techniques sharpened up and that sort of thing, and make your plans and come back and see us again in the spring, summer.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that makes sense. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't drawing the conclusion, you know, based on nebulous conditioning, but it sounds like it sounds like it really is going to be better fit for me to wait and just not and do the There Is Nothing Wrong With You than the Eightfold Path one.
Well, and of course, you know, there are other things too. I mean, I can't remember all of the retreats that are on the schedule, but there are other kind of, you know, ones that have a different focus. But, you know, we always do the same thing. Have you noticed that?
I've only been to one workshop, so I don't know.
Well, but when you listen to us talk, I mean, it's always the same process, right? It's embracing into conscious, compassionate awareness that which suffers. So then we look at, you know, the kind of shining different lights on that, but the process is the same. So even, you know, when you call in and we talk, that's what's happening, right? There's always a focus on this is what's going on. We talk about it, the encouragement, whether stated or unstated, is that this is what's going on with you. You get a chance to see it. I reflect it back to whatever degree. We talk about it. There's an acceptance for you that's possible for where you are and what you're seeing and what you're doing. And then you take the next step.
Okay.
Yeah. So, in other words, you don't have to be a stranger just because you're not going to do a retreat until the summer.
Okay, that makes sense.
All right, good. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry.
Uh-huh. Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Elizabeth. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsor here, and then we'll talk to our other callers.
All right.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have another caller here, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Rachel in Maryland.
Hi, Rachel. How
Hi,
are
Sherry.
You?
Okay. I have a big piece of content.
Oh.
I'm looking for some guidance. And
let's look at it.
Yeah, I was told on Friday that I am losing my job.
Oh, wow.
And it has nothing to do with my performance or getting laid off or anything. It's a personality conflict with the owner. It's a very small business, and she apparently is too awkward to come to work and be in a space with me. So the way she phrased it was that her ideal scenario is that I find a way to transition out of my job.
Well, that's so delicately phrased, isn't it?
Yes. There's all the big talk and voices surrounding, you know, the uncertainty and the change and what if, and but the program we've worked out at the moment is that I will continue to be working for another month or 2 months, kind of as a way for me to have time to look for another job and for them to train someone else and have a smooth overlap.
And I'm guessing that this works for you. You weren't that happy either?
Change is always hard, but all in all, I can accept this. And, and I've been wanting to leave anyway.
Yeah.
Kind of been loosely talking about it.
So can I just tell you something, Rachel?
Mm-hmm.
When you say change is always hard.
Yes.
Yeah. You know that that's not universally true, right? For instance, I threatened to get T-shirts made that say, change is good. Because I love change.
Okay.
So I couldn't tell when you said it whether you meant change is really hard for me or if there was a belief in there that was kind of going by under the radar that, empirically speaking, change is hard or difficult or uncomfortable or whatever.
Absolutely, change is hard for me.
Yeah, okay.
100%.
Yeah, because, you know, if it were hard for everybody, then we would just say, well, yeah, and what can we do? But since it isn't, since there are actually people who love change, who crave change, then it's something that we can consider adding to our repertoire.
Okay.
Anyway, I didn't mean to derail you, but it did seem an important point.
Indeed, yes, considering how hard it is for me.
Yeah.
What I'm struggling with is the idea of going in every day now, and I'm not feeling kindly to my five other colleagues.
Now, did they have something to do with this, or?
They all played a small role, yes. In my perception.
You feel kind of ganged up on.
Yes. So,
and now, once again, do you think that that's true, or do you think it might be you're getting some kind of slanted information from a voice that's invested in you being miserable?
Yes, I feel it definitely seems like there are stories being told to me by my conditioning in my head that it definitely wants to make me miserable.
Okay, so it's kind of egging you on not to be kindly, not to have a kindly feeling toward your colleagues?
Yes, and it spins into feelings of rejection and taking things personally, and I was never appreciated, and I put so much of myself into it, and on and on.
Yeah, okay. Okay, and it's definitely not helping you focus on the, actually, I wasn't that happy there. I was ready to leave. This is kind of probably a blessing in disguise because I might have resisted the change and stayed in an unhappy situation. Now I have a chance to go find something else for myself. It's not putting that spin on it yet.
It is. It is distracting me from from remembering that I've been talking about leaving myself.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. Now, in your practice, you know this as the techniques that egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate uses, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So now you're going to leave. It's only going to focus on everything bad and negative about that place and those people, because that'll make you miserable. Then when it's time for you to leave, well, it'll probably give you a little honeymoon period when you find something new, and then it'll start in on the new thing, right? It'll compare the new to the old. It'll idealize the old. It'll find everything wrong with the new, you know, try to convince you that you actually made a mistake. Like, you know all that, right?
Yes, it's good to hear it again.
Okay. It is good to be reminded, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. And do you have a recording and listening practice?
A fresh one, yes.
Good, good. Because the mentor, of course, is just going to be your best friend through this. So getting some of those recordings down, that things that you want to listen to. So how would you like the next month or two as you're making this transition? How would you like it to go?
I don't know if this is me or this is a conditioning layer, but just I go to the word detached. Just show up, do my work, not feel anything.
Uh-huh.
Come
okay.
home, then start feeling things.
Uh-huh. And so what about the possibility of going in and being the person that you would like everybody else to be?
That sounds
given,
good.
Yeah, given that what we get is what we do,
uh-huh.
if you were to go there and be within yourself the way you wish your boss had been, your colleagues had been, then you get to have the experience that you want. If you go there and you're going to be detached and cold and unfeeling, and then that's going to be your experience. And I'm guessing if it's a regular kind of a job, that's a lot of prime hours out of your life that you're going to have to be unhappy. Because karmic conditioning says this is the way you should treat people who have treated you badly.
Uh-huh.
But why?
Why should
you suffer? Why should you suffer?
Well, I definitely get that the message of that's protecting myself. I'm securing inside my shell.
Unhappily.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of it's so great to see that, because it is really the kind of crapola that karmic conditioning self-hate pulls on people all the time. My favorite example is it encourages people always to be disappointed as a way of avoiding disappointment.
Uh-huh.
You know, inside the head, when it's making the case for it, it can sound kind of intelligent, but then when we see it for what it is, it's just stupid. So it's going to protect you by making you unhappy for a month or two. So these people have already done the worst that they can do to you.
Yes.
So why not be happy inside your own little world? Now, I would get thrown out of the spiritual club for saying something like this. So we'll, as soon as I say it, you know, we'll all pretend that I didn't. But you know that expression, living well is the best revenge?
Mm-hmm. I've heard that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So can you imagine what that could possibly do to people who are living in an environment where making other people unhappy seems a route to their own happiness, if that's what you're describing. And it is, in my experience, what most work situations are. Yeah? So here you come. Now you're out of there, right? You're on your way out, and you're really happy. And you're having a good time. You're doing your job. You're doing a great job. And you're really happy. And nobody has any ability to affect you at all. It'll drive them crazy. But if you come in there and you're sullen and taciturn and detached and obviously miserable, can you see how karmic conditioning has really won that round?
Mm-hmm. It feels, though, that by going in and being happy, it confirms, oh, we did the correct action to tell her to leave because
good.
She's been so miserable, and so they feel good about what they did.
Yeah, good. I doubt that it will have that effect, but if it does, do you care?
No.
No.
I don't want to care.
No. That is the most positive sort of not caring. You know, you don't want to care in a way that causes you to want to make them unhappy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if they get unhappy because you're happy, okay. If they get happy because you're happy, good. Everybody's happy. But I can't see any point in you being unhappy for a month or two to in some way punish them for what they did to you.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was definitely where I feel I'm headed was 2 months of misery and
Yeah, exactly. And of course the voices want to blame them, but I can promise you as soon as you get out of there, the voices are going to turn on you. Tell you how it was your fault and this is what you did and this is that, and they weren't that bad, and it wasn't a bad place, and if you'd been a different person, you know.
I'm already having bouncing back and forth between it's them, no, it's me, you know, what did they do wrong? What did I do wrong?
Yep. And all that's happening, as you can see, is that karmic conditioning is getting all of your attention.
Mm-hmm.
So with your new little recording and listening practice to focus on how you want to be, how you want to feel, the goodness that you wish for everyone, everything that's beautiful in your life, all you have to be grateful for, how you would like to be freed up to be a happier, healthier, more pleasant contribution to all of life, and that's what you focus on.
Good, that's a start.
Pardon me?
That sounds like a great start, and I'll take that to my recorder.
Yeah,
and,
good. And then keep me posted, okay?
Okay. I also just want to mention that I am a first-time caller.
Oh, congratulations, and thank you.
Thank you. I've been listening all along, and one of those, you know, participating silently.
Yes. Quietly participating. Very good, very good. Yeah.
Yes, so, and
mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I was just also going to throw a word of support and gratitude for the Zen coaching, the awareness coaches, because that is really, I've been doing that for several months now and is totally changing things for me and helping me out.
Oh, that's excellent.
So,
excellent.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really glad you have that support because when I said keep me posted, you know, part of it is that it is a really tough place. And the voices are just going to be, full tilt, trying to get you back into a place of misery. So consider this support for you, and I'm really glad you have the coach for support and just get all the support you get. And because it will be a tremendous triumph for you to get to the other side without succumbing to that suffering that karmic conditioning has lined up for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. All right. Well, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you, Terry. And thank you, Michael.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Rachel. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, we're going to hear from our coaches program, and then we'll be back to talk.
From those very coaches we were just talking about.
Those very ones, indeed.
All right.
Okay.
People. All right.
The year of deepening practice has produced a new support opportunity for people of all levels of practice. A team of Zen awareness coaches guided by Sherry Huber, who offer individual coaching to support awareness practice. This coaching program is designed to help strengthen the inner voice of self-compassion and peace, and places a special emphasis on recording and listening. Whether you're brand new or a long-timer, awareness coaching can be the extra support your heart desires. As the Buddha said, we must each work out our own salvation diligently. Zen awareness coaches can assist you wherever you are in your practice. For more information, visit sanghamarket.com. Look for the Little Zen Monk under the Services section. These services are offered with loving kindness to support those wishing to deepen their practice.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Barbara here from Australia.
Hi.
Well, hello.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Yeah, I'm doing better than last time I called in.
Good, good. Tell us about it, please.
Yeah. Well, I was remembering last time I called in, I was really in that place of, you know, bang in the dark room, back in the light room, back in the dark room, like really pretty nonstop, and, you know, the extremes of one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And that went on for quite a while. And then just, you know, just kind of relatively recently, the light room's kind of more light room happening, less dark room. The periods in the dark room are less, I think, to be able to, you know, stay kind of more aware when I'm there and kind of get myself out of there quicker. But, you know, I've just been thinking about calling in and what I wanted to say. I noticed that, you know, because I've had sort of longer periods of not being in that place, there's that part that thinks it's over. You know, it's like, oh, I've done that, you know.
Yeah, I know that one. Oh, thank God that's behind me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, we're silly.
I've also noticed that, you know, when that was really happening, you know, I felt really kind of, yeah, because of my health situation, I've been pretty much at home alone with this for a lot of this year, and, you know, up against it really, and not, so practicing hard with it, and, you know, I noticed that as it's eased up, you know, that intensity of suffering, I suppose, there's that also, that tendency to feel that I can sort of, you know, don't have to practice as hard or, that I can kind of take a breather or something. I just wanted to say that because I've...
Yeah, I'm glad you did.
There's something about that level of intensity that even though it was incredibly difficult and hard, I was sort of having to be, you know, minute at a time kind of thing. So it puts you very on the spot.
Yeah, it does. And the thing about it is, that's a huge belief. It's just a huge belief that conditioned people have, that suffering is what inspires us to practice. That without suffering, we wouldn't want to practice. And there are lots of people who actively stay in suffering or seek out suffering because they feel like that inspires them to wake up. And it's, well, of course, anything we're going through is, if we're going through it, it must be because we need to go through it, or we wouldn't be going through it. But I always find that so regrettable, because the thing is, when we are not suffering, if we practice with the same intensity when we are not suffering that we practice when we are suffering, the net result is bliss.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What karmic conditioning talks people into is, okay, it's okay if you practice now while you're suffering, because of course you're generating a ton of suffering. So, you know, if you want to practice with that's fine with us, because we're still, as karmic conditioning, you know, we're still getting our meals on a regular basis here. But then when you get through that, and as you say, you move back to the light room, then what it wants a person to do is just try to coast along, not noticing that they're going just slightly downhill every day, just not a big deal, not really noticeable, until they have gradually slid completely into a ditch. Right. And then, of course, the beatings start with, what's the matter with you? You were doing so well. I can't believe you. Right. And then the person practice, gets to neutral again and starts to slide. So if we would get to that neutral place and then really kick in the practice, I don't know, kick in, I don't know how you finish that off, but really turn our attention to practicing, then we go from neutral to well-being to this is great to, oh my God, this is phenomenal, to, you know, ecstatic states and bliss.
Yeah. I think, you know, it gets on that, it's just more subtle, you know, it's more subtle picking up what conditioning's doing, because when it's the dark room, it's like not subtle, you know, it's like
right.
Very obvious.
Yeah. Somebody's beating you
but
over
then
the
when
head.
That's not, yeah, and when it's not that, I've just, you know, just been from day to day kind of noticing and checking in and, you know, thinking I'm doing well, and then, like you said, sort of seeing getting caught out and realizing
yes.
that I've really taken my eye off the ball.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right, that's a great image, because then we come to when the ball hits us right between the eyes, right?
Yeah.
So to move, you know, moving into a place, of course, it's, you know, what you're in the light room, the obvious response to that is gratitude, right? And so to take that opportunity really to move into gratitude, to live in thank you, to live in gusho, to expand the conscious, compassionate awareness to include more and more and more until, and you know, Barbara, for somebody in your situation where you are your primary company and your world consists to a large degree to what's very close in proximity to you, to learn to see that completely, to expand that in a breadth and a depth sort of way, that the simplest thing in your environment is clearly to you the entire universe. And you can be in an ecstatic place with any simple thing that you give yourself to, heart and soul.
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly, you know, a lot of the time this year I felt pretty convinced that I wasn't going to get out of that dark room place without changing my external situation in some way. And then, you know, nothing's changed externally, you know, that I've put into place to change. And, yeah, I mean, when I I can see that. I can go from my situation feeling like intolerable and inescapable and a place of great suffering, and then when it opens out, it's the source of joy.
Yes. Yes.
If I do, like, yeah, pay attention to the flowers on the tree outside and, you know, the things
yes.
that are around me, what I have.
Yes. So, you know, people go all over the world to see stuff, right? To see stuff. But the whole point is the seeing, not the stuff. And so if I can't really see, it technically doesn't matter what I'm looking at. And if I can really see, it doesn't matter what I'm looking at.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you can find as much delight in those flowers on that tree in your yard as you could find anywhere on this planet if you're really there with those flowers.
Thank you.
Mm.
And, yeah. You know, I just want to say, too, for me, the Zen coaching has been incredibly supportive, and the archives, you know, I've pretty much listened to the archives every day this year, and they've just been lifesavers a lot of the time. So
we've been right there with you, haven't we?
Yeah, look, it's been, I feel very supported by it, so thank
Good.
You so much to you both for being there every week.
Our pleasure. Thank you for being here.
Okay.
Take care, huh?
I will.
Okay.
I will.
All right. Talk to you soon,
Bye.
Barbara.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Barbara. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, I think we have time for another caller.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello. This is Jenny from New Mexico.
Hello, Jane.
Jenny.
What? Jenny?
Yeah.
Hi, Jenny. J E N N Y?
Yeah.
Yep. Hi.
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 I'm a first time caller.
Oh, two in one night. Are we lucky
yep.
or what? What's going on?
Not much. Mainly, I just wanted to call. Let's see. Something, I guess, that's come up for me has been just that I've noticed, like, that I start to defend myself quite often. Like, I'll pass a judgment. Like, I'll say, or the thought will come up that just says, you know, something like, I don't like her sweater, or just anything. It could be about myself or the other. And then I'll have the urge to defend. Like, I'll have the urge to defend myself, even. Like, say, you know, you're working on that too slow, and I'll be like, no, but, you know, she's doing the best she can. And to me, it's gotten to the point where, like, I don't even believe the statement she's working too slow. It's just there for me to react with, because I think you said that, you know, the I that is talking is still just the I. So it just feels like, you know, I'm just defending myself.
So
and it's just like ego arguing with itself or something.
Okay, yeah, that's what I wasn't clear about. So all these voices are all inside your head.
Yeah, yeah.
So nobody outside is saying you're working on that too slowly.
Oh, no, no, no.
Wow. Okay. That is so powerful to catch on to, isn't it? Because
yeah.
if you weren't watching it, if you weren't paying attention to it, you would believe this is how it goes for us. You would actually start believing that somebody outside your head was judging you. And that those defenses inside you were valid. Right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah?
I right.
mean, that's the kind of place it leads. So the fact that you've seen it and that it's all happening inside your head, and that what you that you caught on, that it's ego arguing with itself so that it gets all the airtime all the time.
Yes, that's how it feels. It feels like it's just the energy that comes up after it's made these judgments. It's just another ego saying, but no, you know, she's doing the best she can. And I'm like, there's just this, you know, this conversation that doesn't need to be happening.
Happening very close to you and having nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's like there's a television in the room with you and you can't turn it off.
Right, yeah, yeah. That's it. That's it, yeah.
Well, I just want to encourage you that this is a fabulous place to be in practice. Because what you can do, of course, is what you're doing, which is just be aware of it. And to realize that that you, and I'm making little, you know, quote marks in the air
right
here, that you are the awareness that is aware of it. And so it actually, you don't even need to do anything about it. It really is like having the TV in the room that can't be turned off. You can direct your attention away from it. You know, you can bring it back to the breath. You can bring it back to, you know, whatever. You can bring it back to a mantra of, you know, I choose peace and calm. I let go of all judgment, or whatever it is that you want to be reminded to direct your attention to when you realize it's on this little tennis match here of ego. But the essential thing is for you to realize that you're seeing ego identity in action, and you're seeing it from a disidentified place. It's really big.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
so don't let yourself get concerned about it. Don't let it draw you into this has something to do with you, or you need to do something about it, because that's just gonna suck more of your attention into its little melodrama.
Okay, so recently I've just been like, when I start to say, you know, oh, you know, she's doing the best she can, I'll just like stop myself, like I'm just, you know, it's defending itself, it's engaging in this process.
Yeah.
But it's just important just to be in the awareness that's going on. Okay.
Exactly. And when it comes up, you can use it as a trigger to redirect your attention.
Oh,
so it comes up and you say, "Ah, right, I want to be with the breath." And you just take a long, full breath, and all of your attention is on the breath. And then, of course, it's going to start back up again and try to draw you into what it's doing.
Okay.
So you just use all of those things that it's doing to try to get your attention as flags to bring you back to, oh, no, I want to be here. Where are my feet? And how about my body? I want to relax my shoulders and be with the breath and really be here and present and whatever it is that you want to do as your practice of directing your attention to your awareness.
Okay. Okay.
That's fun.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's definitely much better. And that I can just use that as, like you said, just let it go and just go back to silence or breath or whatever
that's
I want
right
it to be.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Let me know how it goes, huh?
Okay, definitely.
Thanks
thank
for calling.
Much.
Thanks
sure
for calling. Don't be a stranger.
Okay, I won't.
Okay, good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jenny. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Glad
that's
you got
two
that one on, Michael, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, that was good. Glad
yes
we did some Jenny. Yeah.
Two first-time callers. That is really
I know.
Fun.
We are blessed.
We are very blessed.
Yeah. Okay, talk to you next week.
Yes. Thank you, Sherry.
Okay. Thanks, Michael. Good night.
Okay. Good night.